The court, my name is Scott Livingston, and I'm here before this honorable court representing the appellant Giant Eagle Inc. I would like to reserve 2.5 minutes for rebuttal. This case involves three novel propositions of law that were relied on by the Ninth District to overturn the jury verdict in favor of Giant Eagle and to find error in that verdict. The most important issue, although there are three issues that this court has been asked to consider, by far the most important issue for Ohio's citizens and for Giant Eagle is whether a plaintiff, by merely pleading only negligence, can deprive a defendant of the right to assert self-defense at trial in a civil case when there is ample evidence to support the elements of that defense. It is most important issue for Giant Eagle because if this court finds that that issue of self-defense was properly submitted to the jury, then a judgment in favor of Giant Eagle must be rendered, and this court need not address the other two issues presented for review. It is most important to Ohio's citizens because under the United States and Ohio constitutions, each citizen of this state has a constitutional right to defend himself or herself from an unprovoked attack. The General Assembly recognized long ago, even before the Ohio Constitution became law, that each citizen has a fundamental and inalienable right to exercise self-defense. Blackstone himself referred to self-defense as the first law of nature.
And was Blackstone talking about it in a civil sense or in a criminal sense?
I believe that case law from this jurisdiction and other jurisdictions makes it clear that that right is not limited.
No, I'm not talking about case. You quoted Blackstone, and my question is, that quote from Blackstone, is that in the context of a criminal setting or a civil setting?
I believe that Mr. Blackstone did not limit it to the criminal setting. If the Ninth District's decision on self-defense is allowed to stand, citizens of Ohio will be fearful that if they are attacked and they defend themselves, that if the plaintiff decides to sue them only civilly, they will not be able to assert that defense at trial.
Your argument seems to separate the issue of the duty of Giant Eagle to train or advise its employees on how to respond to someone who they think is a thief, on one hand, from what we would call a common assault, where someone is assaulted and they defend themselves by assaulting the person who assaulted them. Is that correct? We've got two issues that seem to me to be sort of on separate tracks here.
Mr. Chief Justice, I think that Giant Eagle's position was that even assuming that a jury found that it didn't properly train its employees, that at the end of the day, that had really nothing to do with the death of Mr. Niskanen, that his death occurred because he attacked Giant Eagle's employees without provocation, and he ultimately perished while they were trying to defend themselves with the assistance of two customers.
Well, I guess the argument is on the other side is that if Giant Eagle had trained its employees not to pursue someone that they thought was stealing goods from their store, that this would not have occurred.
Yes. Mr. Chief Justice, the other side has argued, or did argue at trial, that there was negligent training and that Giant Eagle also was negligent in apprehending and restraining Mr. Niskanen. They asserted two theories of negligence. And I don't think there's any question that self-defense is directly relevant to the negligent apprehension claim. As to the negligent training claim, self-defense is a justification defense. It says, assuming the defendant did anything wrong, the law finds that it was not wrongful. This court held in the Preferred Mutual versus Thompson case in the context of an intentional act exclusion under an insurance policy, that's exactly what self-defense is, and it's not wrongful. The defendant hasn't done anything because society has decided that it's important for people to have that ability to defend themselves.
Help me link up the self-defense argument to the argument by the plaintiff that the self-defense argument doesn't relate to John Eagle's alleged failure to train their employees on how to respond. That self-defense isn't really a defense to that, is it?
Well, the actual evidence at trial was hotly contested on that issue. The plaintiff took the position that Giant Eagle had a policy, which they thought was a good policy, that if a suspect, and a shoplifting suspect, when Giant Eagle goes to confronts them, flees, Giant Eagle's policy was don't chase after that person. But the testimony from Giant Eagle's employees, and under the Ohio shopkeeper's privilege statute, Giant Eagle had a right under its own policies and under that statute to approach the suspect in his initial matter, to confront him, to attempt to say, hey, don't take those groceries or what's going on here.
They can detain them until law enforcement arrives.
That's right. And they have a right to approach. In this instance, he had not been confronted. He was outside of the store, casually unloading his unloading the cart full of groceries that he didn't pay for into his car. And Giant Eagle's employees were on their way to confront him when he became he attacked them without provocation. And at that point in time, the policies didn't have anything to do with what happened after that, because even their expert agreed that Giant Eagle's employees had a right to defend themselves, and that no employer should be training people in the art of self-defense, because you hope to avoid physical confrontations in those situations.
Well, counsel, isn't we're talking a civil case here now. Isn't contributory negligence a sufficient opportunity for your company to defend its interests, which it did assert, and the jury found that the contributory negligence was substantial in this case? You want to raise something and claim it's an absolute bar to recovery.
If you are able, I mean, it's a very significant issue that was presented to the jury. Giant Eagle had to establish that it had no choice but to exercise the force that it did under the circumstances, that the force was not excessive, that it was reasonable, and so forth. And the jury obviously had to make those findings and did make those findings. A defendant cannot be deprived of a defense that is supported by the evidence merely because it has other defenses to whatever the claim may be. And I think the Supreme Court, in the U.S. Supreme Court in Matthews, has said that even if you have inconsistent defenses in the criminal arena, you are entitled, in a matter of due process, to assert those inconsistent defenses. It may not be the greatest trial strategy, but you have a due process right to do that.
Mr. Livingston, it seems as though the Court of Appeals was saying that because this is a civil case, you can't use the criminal concept of self-defense. But as I understand it, your evidence of self-defense, or your argument, would be that this activity was related to what a reasonable person would do in ordinary circumstances. So, I mean, it does have the tinge of negligence in this case, correct?
Absolutely. This was not the typical self-defense situation where somebody uses a weapon or takes offensive measures and punches the other person. In that situation, the defendant can't reasonably say, I didn't do that intentionally. In this case, Giant Eagle, the evidence was pretty clear that Giant Eagle was taking only defensive measures. The employees and customers were merely trying to hold him down and to protect themselves and others. And they didn't realize, or we wouldn't be here today, they didn't realize that they were causing Mr. Niskanen harm. They had no intent to harm him. And that certainly was what the jury could have found, and I believe they did find.
Counsel, the argument about the inadequate training seems to me it's being used that it's a policy designed to prevent the store employees from harming somebody that might be shoplifting and fleeing. But wouldn't that policy really be designed to protect the employees of Giant Eagle from harm by the fleeing suspected shoplifter? And so if is that the case, and if so, how would that argument even benefit the plaintiff in this case at all?
I think you're right, Justice Kopp. I think that that is one of the main reasons for that policy, and it's just a cost-benefit analysis, and the company has said, gee, if someone's taken a bag of groceries and there's a significant risk that he's going to harm a customer or an employee, let him go. But that only happens after the initial effort to confront. I mean, were we to read the policy the way Mrs. Niskanen is asking this court to read the policy, he could have been loading up a dump truck out there, and we would have had to just let him to fill his truck full of groceries. And he was essentially doing that in a smaller scale.
In other words, they weren't chasing him through a lot. They just went out to the car where he was loading the groceries to make the initial confrontation.
Absolutely. And, you know,
I read the Court of Appeals decision in response to Justice Pfeiffer's question, did the Court of Appeals pretty much say you couldn't use self-defense, therefore you couldn't allege contributory negligence? Is that how they read it, or am I reading that wrong?
I think the Court of Appeals said that Giant Eagle could assert comparative fault, that Court of Appeals did reject Mrs. Niskanen's argument that as to the training claim, that Giant Eagle at least could still assert comparative fault. But they found, in reliance on this court's 1924 decision in State v. Champion, in the criminal context, borrowing that criminal rule and sticking it into a civil case, which has never been done by this court, any court in Ohio, or any court in the country that I could find in our research. And I think the reason why it hasn't been done is because under Ohio Rule of Civil Procedure 8, which is similar to the federal rule, a defendant has a right to raise inconsistent defenses. And even if we don't agree that Giant Eagle took any inconsistent positions at trial, but even if it did, even if self-defense was in some way inconsistent with anything else that Giant Eagle asserted, it had a right under the civil rules to assert that. And I think this court might want to reconsider State v. Champion in light of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Matthews, which certainly calls it into question in the criminal arena. This court doesn't have to reach that constitutional question because the civil rules themselves allow Giant Eagle to assert inconsistent defense.
Would you address the issue of the allegation of actual malice in light of the dismissal of all claims except negligence, the one that led to the punitive damages claim?
Well, in that, the punitive damages claim, the plaintiff, Mrs. Niskanen, asserts that under the American rule, I'm not sure that it's, I didn't know that's what it was called, but assuming it's called the American rule, if the defendant's conduct is of a level that's much greater than the plaintiff's misstep, then we're going to say that that essentially trumps any comparative fault finding. And that's right in the Ohio Tort Reform Act. There's no question about that. But that requires that there be a finding by the jury of an intentional tort, essentially. Punitive damages under this court's longstanding jurisprudence is not an intentional tort. It is not a standalone claim. It is merely something that the jury is allowed to consider if there has been a finding in favor of the plaintiff on at least one claim and an award of at least some damages, compensatory damages. That didn't occur here. And it didn't occur for a couple of reasons. Plaintiff didn't prevail on any claim, and Giant Eagle also prevailed on its self-defense claim. And there's no way to get around the fact that although Mrs. Niskanen acknowledges that punitive damages cannot be reached without an award of compensatory damages, you have to essentially elevate punitive damages to a standalone claim to get the result that Mrs. Niskanen wants this court to reach on that issue. I think it's important for the court to recognize that in this situation, no court has ever held that you can reach punitive damages even though you've never prevailed on any claim at all at trial. And I think this court has essentially already spoken on this issue in the Malone versus Marriott case, where there, the plaintiff, like Mrs. Niskanen, did not prevail due to comparative fault, but argued that the jury should have been allowed to consider punitive damages because if they made a finding of actual malice, which is similar to the scienter required for an intentional tort.
Need to sum up, Mr. Livingston.
That would trump that finding. This court rejected that position.
Thank you, Mr. Livingston. Mr. Fogarty.
May it please the court. I'm Bob Fogarty in hometown Youngstown, Ohio. May it please the court. I would like to first of all address the self-defense argument. Whether the individual employees of Giant Eagle acted in self-defense is irrelevant, an inappropriate defense to a plaintiff's claim against a corporate defendant that it failed to train its employees according to the standard of care. It was admitted in this case by the Vice President of Safety of Giant Eagle that the standard of care was that you train your employees, do not pursue a shoplifter who is fleeing a store. That wasn't only Giant Eagle policy, it was admitted that that was a standard of care. And it was further admitted that a breach of that standard of care, it was foreseeable that there could be an altercation that occurred that could harm not only the employees of Giant Eagle, but the shoplifter himself.
Counsel, under that guideline of how to address a shoplifter, are you reading that to mean that they are not to draw the shoplifting to the attention of the shoplifter? Is it?
No, Your Honor, the policy is very clear. If the shoplifter is pursuing, which was admitted by every witness.
The shoplifter is pursuing?
I'm sorry, if the shoplifter is fleeing the store, the standard of care and the corporate policy about which these employees were not trained do not pursue.
All right, but my understanding is that he was loading his groceries at the time that he was confronted.
No, they pursued him out of the store, Your Honor. That's the undisputed evidence. They pursued him in violation of this first rule, this first standard of care, and that is the negligence claim that the plaintiffs went to the jury on. That's the negligence claim that the jury found was a proximate cause of the death and injuries. And that negligence, that tortious conduct was complete prior to the time any self-defense arose. Self-defense only excuses or justifies tortious conduct, but if the tortious conduct, which was the proximate cause, according to the jury, of these injuries had already occurred and been completed prior to the self-defense, and it was also undisputed that the foreseeable...
Your argument is that if you have a policy and you violate it, you can't use a reasonable man standard. I mean, a reasonable man standard may be very much that you're not running, you're not trying to evade. You're simply taking your groceries that you haven't paid for out and put them in your car, and a reasonable employee can't stop that because there's a policy. That's your position?
Your Honor, that's not my position at all. That is Giant Eagle's policy.
No, I'm saying if Giant Eagle has that policy, you're saying that policy trumps regular negligence law about whether that act is reasonable or not.
No. What I'm saying is the testimony from Giant Eagle was that policy was the standard of care. That was the law. It was standard of care
for what they train their employees, no. But I'm talking about standard of care for what a reasonable action would be for an ordinary person.
Agreed,
which is different.
Your Honor. That is the industry standard of care that must be followed in that situation. That's the standard of care which it was undisputed that they breached by following and pursuing a shoplifter. There was no dispute in the record about that.
Okay, so if
there's
they
a videotape that shows them running.
If they breach that standard of care, that's negligence in your theory.
Yes.
Then why doesn't comparative negligence come into play when this person gets violent and starts attacking the employees? Why doesn't that Why is that obviated under common law?
It absolutely is not, as Justice Pfeiffer indicated. Comparative negligence was a defense under those circumstances. They argued sole proximate cause. That was a defense they lost on. They argued assumption of the risk. That was a defense they lost on. The jury, as you know, found 60% comparative.
Why doesn't that end the case?
That doesn't end the case because under the American rule and 100 years of precedent of this court, that if a jury determines that a defendant acted with actual malice or conscious disregard for the rights and safety of others, it trumps comparative negligence. That is the rule of Shellhouse, Malone versus Marriott, Whiteman, and it's also been codified by the Ohio legislature in 2315.32b.
I guess then the problem that maybe some of us have, at least I have, is you have a negligence claim. How do you get to actual malice when you have a negligence claim and you dismissed the other claims?
Yeah, please let me clarify that because any review of the record will show that that is just not accurate. The amended complaint, I could not draft it clearer. Beginning in the first paragraph, it alleges that these actions were done with negligence and in conscious disregard. Counts 1 and 2 are replete with allegations of willful and intentional conduct and that the actions were taken with conscious disregard for the rights and safety of others. That claim was not only pled, it went to the jury. And as you know, the Court of Appeals affirmed the finding that the conscious disregard should go to the jury. That is not under appeal here. Giant Eagle is not even challenging that their actions were committed with such conscious disregard that the jury should have been instructed on it. Our problem is, Your Honor, if the jury had answered the interrogatory, do you find that there was conscious disregard, then it would have trumped comparative negligence under all of the leading cases of this court. And the instruction on conscious disregard was exactly the instruction that Chief Justice Moyer set forth in Preston v. Murdy. That instruction's not being challenged. If the jury was simply permitted to answer the question, do you find that Giant Eagle acted in conscious disregard, there would be no comparative. And that's why I think that argument is not being was not advanced in front of you today.
Mr. Fogarty, under Civil Rule 8E2, a party can assert as many claims or defenses, regardless of consistency. Giant Eagle pled specifically the defense of self-defense. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And yet the Court of Appeals seems to suggest that a plaintiff's case may basically throw out one of the defenses because in the court's mind it was a criminal defense in a civil case. Do you want to respond to that?
I'd be happy to, Your Honor. I think the Court of Appeals went three ways. They said, first of all, self-defense, it's just not relevant to a negligent failure to train not to pursue. The tortious conduct is completed before there could be any self-defense, and the foreseeable conduct occurred. There's no self-defense against the corporate defendant. There could be self-defense against the individual defendants where those claims were not pursued to jury verdict. Secondly, I think what the court was saying is like in Goldfuss, if the evidence does not support a charge to the jury on self-defense, then don't get it, don't give it. When the Giant Eagle employee, Assistant Manager Stress, testified, I didn't intend to inflict deadly force, and in fact, I deny that I even used deadly force, a chokehold. He denied throughout trial that he ever used a chokehold, which the medical evidence said was the mechanism of death, a prolonged chokehold. When the defendant denies factually that he used deadly force, under Goldfuss, there's insufficient evidence to give a charge, even if it was relevant. But ultimately, isn't the bottom line in interrogatories that says, do you find that the individual defendants acted in self-defense? How is that a bar to a corporate negligence defense that you failed to train your employees not to pursue a fleeing shoplifter, which was a breach of the standard of care. It's undisputed in the record that that was a breach of the standard of care. The jury found that that was a, in fact, a proximate cause of the death. Self-defense of an individual later, the Court of Appeals correctly found, was totally irrelevant to that, to the corporate negligence charge. We're not
there
claiming.
There was no claim that they used excessive force. That was not part of your claim.
As a matter of fact, Your Honor, you will see in the Court of Appeals that was a proposition of error, that we had alleged that the trial court failed to give a negligence charge on the negligent use of force. And since the Court of Appeals went the way on self-defense, it became irrelevant. But no, the only only claim that went to the jury, as you'll see in the jury instructions, was a negligent failure to train and supervise. And what we're saying simply, this isn't about self-defense. We say
But that's where you lose me again, because the Court of Appeals said, it said it found that you dismissed all intentional tort claims, proceeded only against Giant Eagle for negligence. Is that wrong? Is the Court of Appeals wrong?
I think they meant intentional tort in a specific sense of the other counts regarding assault,
because you've repeatedly said we went against Giant Eagle on our claim of negligence. We went against them on a claim of negligence for failure to train.
And conscious disregard, Your Honor.
And that isn't anywhere in this Court of Appeals brief, conscious disregard. It's all negligence, which makes me fail to understand how you get to punitives when you've dropped the claims and you only have negligence.
Your Honor, the trial court charged on conscious disregard. It was obviously, by everyone's recognition in the case, that that charge is not even being challenged by Giant Eagle. So, yes, count one and count two went to the jury on a negligence and act and conscious disregard, both. They were both pled. Unlike the decision in Malone versus Marriott, where the plaintiff had a standalone punitive damage claim only, instead of arguing negligence and conscious disregard. In conscious disregard claim, as the chief said in Preston v. Murdy, conscious disregard means deliberate or intentional. So we could be getting into some nomenclature. But it's clear that conscious disregard was pled, it went to the jury, and it's not even being challenged. This is not a case where in Malone there was a directed verdict on conscious disregard. Here it went to the jury, the Court of Appeals affirmed, and it's unchallenged.
Counsel, you indicated that you used the defendant's own employees to establish what the standard of care was for not only their employees but industry-wide in terms of how you deal with shoplifters. Did you establish, was that always the standard of care, or has that risen? And what I'm thinking of is 15, 16 years ago, Meyer Stores in Columbus, in apprehending what they thought was a shoplifter, threw him to the floor and made him a quadriplegic and got hit with an $11 million verdict. Did things like that come into play to elevate the standard of care that?
Yes, Your Honor, the testimony was Giant Eagle has 45,000 shoplifting incidents per year. That the standard of care in the industry is you do not pursue a shoplifter because it will, the testimony from the Vice President Blazowski, it is a substantial likelihood of causing death or serious injury to employees, the shoplifter, or others. And he had in his file that he didn't train him on a death shortly before in Detroit where there was an asphyxiation similar to this. So the foreseeable consequences of failing to follow that standard of care was specifically an altercation which could result in asphyxiation. That's why the standard of care exists. It wasn't my standard of care. It was admitted and undisputed by Giant Eagle and the industry that that's the standard of care. The jury found that it was a breach causing the death. If the judge had permitted the jury to answer the interrogatory on conscious disregard, there would have been no comparative negligence. The jury did return a general verdict for the plaintiff. The judge overturned that based on comparative. if they had just been permitted to answer the question, if they answered affirmatively, the verdict would have been stated.
Was there a jury instruction on punitive damages?
Yes, Your Honor.
And was there a jury verdict on punitive damages?
The judge did not permit the jury, Your Honor, to answer the question as to whether the actions of John
was
Eagle...
Was there a verdict form that allowed a spot filled in for punitive damages?
There was an interrogatory on that the judge did not permit them to answer, Your Honor, based
was
on
there
their
a jury verdict form that had a line for punitive damages?
Yes.
And what did the jury put in that line?
There was nothing in that line, Your Honor, because they, under the interrogatories, they were told to stop deliberating before they got to that line. That was the error. But they did enter a general verdict for the plaintiff, and under the long-standing precedent of this court, which has been codified, conscious disregard negates comparative negligence. The Court of Appeals didn't do anything other than ask that long-standing precedent here, nothing new, nothing unique, nothing novel at all about this case, be followed, and that self-defense on a corporate negligence game just wasn't relevant. Nothing new or novel. Self-defense still remains. The law of Ohio, there's just nothing new or novel about this case. It was just a failure to follow all of the existing law.
Wouldn't the answer, the jury's answer to interrogatory number 3, John Eagle did not use undue restraint under RC, the section code, wouldn't that defeat the conscious disregard argument? Or you argue they could find conscious disregard even though they found that the employees used proper restraint or did not use undue restraint under the statute?
No, Your Honor, because the conscious disregard claim of the plaintiff at trial was consciously failed to follow the standard of care in training its employees. That was the conscious disregard and the acts of negligence that were taken with conscious disregard. And the vice president of Giant Eagle admitted that that had a great probability of causing serious injury or death if you didn't follow.
But you still have proximate cause, even if you were right in that argument, and the jury didn't find proximate cause as a result of that negligence.
The jury did find proximate cause, Your Honor, and found there were $1 million worth of damages caused as a proximate result of Giant Eagle's negligence. That was a specific interrogatory finding and the general verdict. If there are no other questions, for all these reasons, we believe that the Court of Appeals decision should be affirmed, that this case should be sent back for a new trial consistent with those instructions, and we thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Fogarty. Mr. Livingston, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
And counsel keeps arguing that they did not dismiss their conscious disregard or intentional tort claim in that regard, and they claim that the judge instructed on punitives. Is that accurate?
Well, it's a startling admission if it were true. I mean, the Ninth District clearly thought that all the intentional tort claims were out of the case.
But did the trial court instruct on punitive damages?
It instructed the jury on punitive damages, but it instructed them that if they found in favor of Giant Eagle on all the claims, then they did not need to reach punitive damages because there would have been there's no award of compensatory damages, and there's no justification.
Wait a second. I don't quite understand. If the judge is willing to instruct on punitives, I guess I don't understand why they claim they submitted an interrogatory and the judge wouldn't allow them to answer it. What was the rationale for that?
Well, in the interrogatory, it said, if you don't find in favor, essentially, of the plaintiff on any of the plaintiff's claims, then you do not need to, you know, decide punitive damages.
Okay, so it was one of those where you have to follow A, B, C.
That's correct.
Instead of the judge refusing to give the interrogatory to them.
Oh, that's correct. That's absolutely correct. And the jury even asked a question about whether they needed to even deal with damages because their understanding was because of their findings on all the underlying claims that they didn't need to decide damages. And the court said, you need to fill in an amount respect to the negligence claims, but not, you know, pursuant to the instruction, you didn't have to reach punitive damage.
But they entered a general verdict for the plaintiff?
They were instructed to do that by the trial court, and we do not believe that was the proper procedure, and it was over our objection. But what the court said to counsel at the time was, I'm going to tell them to enter a general verdict for the plaintiff, but given their findings, I will mold the verdict to make it a judgment in favor of Giant Eagle based on the comparative fault finding and the self-defense finding.
So the interrogatories really drove the verdict that the judge told the jury to sign.
That's absolutely correct.
Thank you, Mr. Livingston. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.